Warren Gresham's Memories and Reflections. By Warren Gresham. Edited by Jim Gresham. Introduction. This book has been in the making for a long time. Sometime in the 1990s or earlier, Warren Gresham decided to put his writing skills to good use by recording some of his memories of growing up on a 200-acre farm west of Elbert, Colorado. It wasn't long before he decided it would be a good idea to compile these short stories into a book. He wrote the preface to the book many years ago. The preface, included in the next section, The Inspiration, lays out the theme and intent of his book. Unfortunately, time demands, and more urgent issues delayed the completion of the book, and these memories remained unshared for many years. A few months back, I had a suggestion for Dad. Warren Gresham is much too formal, given the relationship I have with the author. My editorial comments will refer to him as Dad for the remainder of this book. I suggested that he and I collaborate on this book, and press on to completion. As you will see, the scope has expanded beyond stories of growing up on the farm, to include other memories, and reflections on life, and life's events. The chapter titled Through the Years, written in 2020, provides an overview and perspective. The subsequent stories provide more detail. As we worked through the process of writing and compiling this book, the scope has expanded even further, to include writings from others. These contributions from family members are meaningful to Dad, and he wanted to include them in this collection. Besides the contributions from others, the contents of this book are from a variety of sources. First, Dad's stories, written over the years, from decades ago through 2020, are included in the book. When the date the stories were written is known, it is so noted. Second, Dad kept a journal from 1990 to 1993. Some of the entries included memories and reflections which made it into this book. Third, my wife, Diane, and I interviewed my parents and her mother about their childhoods in 1999. We videotaped this interview, in case we needed to use any of the material for future leverage. Some of Dad's recollections shared in that interview made their way into this book. I have added some editorial comments throughout the book, to aid in understanding our transition. A few stories cannot begin to capture the essence of a life well lived, but I hope, as you read this book, you see a little of who Warren Gresham is. I have enjoyed working with him on compiling this book. I even learned a few things I didn't know. I'm honored to have been able to help present these memories and reflections to you, the reader.
Most of all, I'm proud to be Warren Gresham's son. He taught me how to love and serve God. He taught me how a man should love his wife. He taught me how to be a loving father. He taught me how to treat others in all occasions. He taught me how to be a good citizen. He has shown me how to be faithful in all things. He has taught me how to deal with disappointment and loss, with dignity, and he has taught me so much more, just by the way he has lived his life.
These stories only provide a glimpse into his legacy, but I'm proud to have had a part in sharing them. Jim Gresham, editor.
Hello, can you hear?
The Inspiration. This book is a compilation of short stories that relate to living on a farm during a period of time from the 1930s to the present day. It will not appeal to everyone, as it is admittedly directed to those people who have tasted similar experiences. If you were never slapped across the mouth with the gutter-soaked tail of the old cow as you were milking her. If you never felt the grains of wheat between your barefoot toes at harvest, or if you never smelled the sweat of the team of horses as you unharnessed them at the end of the day, this book may not be for you. It is just a simple account of life on a farm, as remembered by one who is a member of the fourth generation of his family to live here. Roots go pretty deep here, as the first members of the family settled here in 1874. Not old, by Eastern accounting and history, but it was a time when Indians still roamed the plains, and most of the land was sod. My family, as did most settlers of that day, homesteaded a property and improved upon it, making it their own. This is not a wealthy land, located on the north slope of the Palmer Lake Divide. It has been said that people in good farming country throw away more than can be harvested here. Some of these stories tend to bear that out. It is our nature to forget the bad things in our life, and remember those things we found pleasant. That's why we call them the good old days. In retrospect, we tend to change some of the things, so that the bad parts are skipped over, and we accentuate the good things. I am guilty of that in this book, I am sure, but I am trying to depict this life as truly as possible. Please forgive me where I have done otherwise. Written about 1990.
Hello, can you hear?
Through the years. An overview. People have always made conjectures as to what is the best time, or years, of your life. They range from youth to what is euphemistically called the golden years, which we know to be old age. In thinking about this, I think back to my early childhood and grade school days. They were good years for me, that is because I knew nothing else, but what a struggle for my parents. I was born in 1931, in the midst of the Depression. No money, and no prospect to get any, caused much hardship. I know that sometime during the first 3 years of my life, my parents had to go live with my grandparents for a time, as they couldn't afford to maintain a house. I don't remember much about it, I just remember being there. They were back in their own home when my brother Alan was born in February of 1934. Blowing dust and sparse crops were results of the drought that prevailed, and made it hard to maintain cattle herds. Dad had a milk herd and fed soapweed, yucca roots, because there was not hay or pasture. I doubt if milk production was very good, but the herd was sustained. Then came the flood of 1935, when a large portion of the town of Elbert washed away. My granddad Gresham's sister, Mary, and her daughter Grace, who operated the hotel, perished, with only one skeleton found years later that may have been one of them. Grade school started for me in 1937. The teacher was Mrs. Stevenson, who for some reason, had to quit before the year was out, and my Aunt Bernice taught the last month of the year. My aunt also was the teacher when I was in the 8th grade. I went to high school in Elbert and managed to graduate in 4 years, despite missing quite a bit of school as a result of an auto accident. I was driving my granddad's car, a 1940 Ford coupe, and going too fast to make a curve. I spent about 3 weeks in the hospital in an unconscious state, but I know my dad's constant vigil and fervent prayers pulled me through. It was November 29th of my junior year, and I thought I would have to take the year over when I was able. However, Mrs. London, one of my favorite teachers, coached me along, and I was able to finish my junior year. The principal, Mr. Kerwald, tried very hard to encourage me to go on to college after graduation, but I was bullheaded, thought I wanted to be a farmer, and didn't know where I would get money enough to do that anyway. I worked at farming the summer after graduation, first for my Uncle Earl, my mom's brother, and then for a neighbor, Henry Carnahan, who raised my wages to $1 an hour and thought I was doing great. Summer ended, and I drove a milk truck for a while that fall. I decided I wanted to go to the service, and in February of 1950, I joined the Air Force. I was never very happy during my stint in the Air Force, I never really got over wanting to go home. My first station was Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas, for basic training, which lasted 13 weeks, then on to Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois. I graduated from Aircraft Sheet Metal School at Chanute Air Force Base, and went on to Patrick Air Force Base in Florida from there. The time there was the best part of my enlistment, I liked the weather, and my job was interesting. Missiles were in the infant stage at that time, as the furthest any had gone, were downrange from the base over the Bahamas. A manned launch was still in the future. I was there about 1.5 years and then my luck ran out, and I was sent to Japan. I was assigned to a troop carrier squadron there, working on C-46 airplanes. My biggest and first job there was repairing the tail well that had been completely torn off. The problem was, I did a good job and my experience sent me to Korea, to do the same thing, on a plane that had the same problem. I spent the winter of 1952 and 1953 there, at a marine base, very cold and snowy. I returned to Japan in May of 1953, and served there until November of 1953, when I boarded a ship on the 10th of the month, and 19 days later, sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge and back into the U.S. I was assigned to Lowry Air Force Base in Denver and was discharged there in December. Helene, and I, did not correspond while I was gone, but I asked her out after I got home, and we were never very far apart after that. We dated as often as possible, spending time at home with Mom and Dad, or going to Merle and Kathy's. On some dates, we took my Uncle Jesse, my sister Anne, or my cousin Russell. It didn't matter who was with us, we only had eyes for each other. We were married 6 months later, on the 20th of June 1954, and set up housekeeping in a little house in Elbert. 4 rooms and a path to the outhouse, that cost us $25 a month. Helene offered to get a better job, and help me go to college, but I went to on-the-job training in a welding shop, under the GI Bill. My job paid $50 a month, the GI Bill paid half, and the employer paid the other half, but sometimes business wasn't too good, and I didn't get the employer part. So, I started driving a school bus that first winter. This helped us, but made the day longer as I still got my 8 hours at the shop. We moved to a ranch house northwest of Elbert that next year, the price was the same, but we had running water, and a bathroom. I quit the shop and went to work in construction at the Air Force Academy. I started as a truck driver, but got beat out by the union and wound up directing traffic. I put up with it that winter and, having all that I could stand, I found a job driving a milk truck. Jim was born on January 1, 1956 and he became the center of our focus. My milk truck days are a story in themselves, but I wound up buying the truck and the business. Merle and Kathy, Helene's sister, moved into his mother's house after her remarriage, and we bought their house, and moved back into Albert in 1958. These were good, fun years. Delmer and Rita Ames were our next-door neighbors, and were very good friends. There was quite a large group of couples that enjoyed square dancing, and playing cards, and our social life was active. Helene, and I, loved to dance, and there was no better couple on the floor when we were doing a waltz. I continued driving the milk truck until I went into the post office as acting postmaster in 1960. I was fortunate to find a buyer for the truck line very quickly, and we settled down to living in town. John was born that year, so our family increased. The kids enjoyed playing with their cousins, Don and Debbie, who lived next door. I continued acting like a postmaster until March of 1964 when I was officially appointed as permanent postmaster by President Lyndon Johnson. My mother, May, died in 1963 and Dad continued to live alone on the farm until 1965 when we bought the farm and moved to it. Dad remarried in 1965, to an old friend, May Cook, and lived in her house in Elbert. Only now do I realize how lonely he was and how hard the living alone was for him. He was again left alone when she died in 1971. He remarried again in 1976 to Elsie Jenkins, and lived in her home in Elizabeth until her death in 1986. He had a bad hip that got progressively worse, and he was planning surgery for it. But backed out the day before he was scheduled. He put up with that, and got to the point that he couldn't walk before he died. He spent his last years in a rest home in Simla, Colorado. Helene had always regretted that she did not have another child, so we started adoption proceedings. That proved to be long and disappointing at times. We were successful in 1969, however. And Thomas George came to be a part of our family.
I retired from the post office on April 29, 1999, just 39 years to the day from when I started there. I guess you could say there was some adjustment there, as it was different with my being home all the time.
We did some traveling, and worked a little harder at farming for a few years. We became even closer together during those years, and Helene's sickness helped intensify our love for each other. Neither of us was ready to end it, but we enjoyed 66 years together. August 11, 2020. Family history and background. Albert is a small town located in eastern Colorado, about halfway between Denver and Colorado Springs, sort of where the foothills end, and the plains begin. Albert is on the north slope of the Palmer Divide, which divides the eastern slope of Colorado in an east-west direction. Waters drain to the north into the Platte River, and to the south into the Arkansas River. The Palmer Divide has some extreme weather, considerable wind, and is noted for hailstorms. Many of the old-timers referred to the area as being harsh, nevertheless many farms and ranches were homesteaded, and developed there. Farming was always the main industry around Albert, with winter wheat the main crop. Oats, barley, corn, and pinto beans were also raised. The climate has changed, and more of the land is being used for hay, with cattle being the primary source of income. When I was a kid, we used to raise corn to feed the milk cows, and beans were our cash crop. There is not nearly as much farming and ranching now in the area. The price of land has made it unprofitable for farming, and much of the land has been developed into housing. The Colorado and Southern Railway went through the town, the tracks running from Denver to near Colorado Springs. In its heyday, there were several trains each day through the town of Albert. However, at the time of the flood in 1935, when all the track within town was washed away, there were only one or two trains a week. The tracks were never repaired, and rail service was discontinued to the towns north of Albert also. My great-grandfather, Daniel Epler, came to Colorado in 1874 and settled in Spring Valley in Douglas County, which is about 10 miles west of where we live now. My grandmother, Mary Elizabeth Epler, was born there in 1876, the year Colorado became a state. Later, Daniel moved the family to a ranch southwest of Albert. Daniel homesteaded land here, and although he did not actually homestead the place I now live on, he did own it. My grandchildren are the sixth generation of that family to be connected with this place. My grandfather, George Gresham, came to Colorado from Joplin, Missouri in 1897. This branch of the Gresham family originally came from Washington County, Tennessee. He came to Colorado, and began working for Daniel Epler. George soon took an interest in Daniel's daughter, Mary, and they were married December 7, 1899. My granddad, Clarence Delano Squires, was born in Wisconsin. His father had moved the family to Colorado, and worked as a baggage agent at the Santa Fe Depot. This train station was located on the east side of Colorado Springs. Later, they moved to Elbert and established the Squires Ranch there. I don't think he homesteaded any of that land, as the Homestead Act was already passed. I think they bought that land. My great-granddad died there, and is buried in the Elbert Cemetery. My grandmother Squires was born in England. She came to this country when she was just a baby. Their name was Russell, and her name was Florence. The Russells all lived in the Colorado Springs area. My granddad and grandmother Squires lived at various points, in and around Colorado Springs. He was a railroad man, always associated with some type of railroad work. They lived in Cripple Creek when my mother was born, and he ran the trolley car from Cripple Creek to Victor. This was during the time that there was a great deal of gold mining activity in the Cripple Creek area. They moved out to the ranch in Elbert in 1913. In fact, there was a large snowstorm in 1913, and their wagon that came from Elbert was among the first to get over the road after the storm of that year. Where I grew up are the headwaters of a draw. It is called a draw because it only has water in it during the rains and flood, most of the time it is dry. This draw runs to the northwest from our place. The first place that you come to is the old Gresham place, where my grandparents lived. The next place on down, was the Clark place. And then, the next place is the Squire's Ranch, where my other grandparents lived. They all lived on that same draw. When I was a kid, there was a lot of interaction with the families, because all the families were still located there. That is, all the children of my grandparents lived right there, with the exception of Uncle Perry, who had gone off and gone to college, and had become a renowned minister and educator. Our playmates were our cousins, because they were the closest. The two grandparents were the hub, so to speak, where we gathered together at the different times of the year, when we would have dinners and things of this nature. And incidentally, there were a lot of those. We had a lot of times that we got together. This is where I grew up, and this is where the memories shared in this book were made.
Hello, can you hear?
The beginnings. I was born on the 23rd of March in 1931. My mom was May Florence Squires, and my dad was Daniel Franklin Gresham. Also known as Frank E. Gresham, or simply Frank Gresham. He used many different aliases in his various pursuits throughout life. I don't remember much about my birth, but I do remember my mom used to tell about the cat throwing up under the bed during the delivery. My granddad Squires was at our house shortly after I was born. He decided he would go home, and as he was leaving, he met my granddad Gresham, who was coming in to see me. He said, "Ah, George, that baby looks just an awful lot like you, but hopefully he'll outgrow it." I don't know what the weather was like that day, but it was probably windy, and it was during a period of dry weather. It continued to be dry in that country, especially through the year 1934. These were the Dust Bowl years. Many stories have been told about the dirt storms that took place. I'll not digress too much here from the original topic, but I can still remember the banks of dust that were in the fence rows, where it had blown up there and drifted, the soapweed would grow there. You can see the effects of that on the place there yet today, where the dirt had blown up and changed the contour of the land. The fence line between my place and Alan's place, which in those days was between my dad's place and Tom Kelly's, is considerably higher than the field which is down to the west of it, and it's all blown in dirt. I was born in a three-room house with a basement, but I don't know as the basement served any practical purpose, except for storage of canned goods and meat. We didn't have electricity or running water. I can remember that we used to butcher in the fall. Of course, he didn't butcher any time except the fall, because the meat had to keep, and sometimes it was stored there in the basement. In those days, very seldom did we have any fresh meat other than chicken throughout the summer, because there was no way to preserve meat. We didn't have any kind of refrigeration, so we ate chicken in the summertime, and we had pork and beef in the winter. We did have some pork and beef in the summer, because Mom would can meat and we would have canned meat in the summer. On February 26, 1934, my dad took me over to the neighbors, and made me spend the night over there. The neighbors were the Cassidys, and I can remember being in this old house, and that it was very cold. It had a heat register in the floor. There was a coal furnace in the crawl space, not really a basement, that the furnace was in. I remember that part of the house had been shut off with a large old brown blanket, to keep the rest of the house reasonably warm. I don't remember the night itself, but I remember getting up and eating breakfast. Incidentally, breakfast was at a long table down one side of the room, with a bench, just one long bench. They had several kids in the family, and I can't remember anymore how many. None of them were my age, they were all older.
I remember sitting on this old man's lap, and watching out the north window as my dad walked across the place to get me. This old house was located just directly south of our house, just across the road. I can remember watching him crossing the road, even yet. He came and got me and told me I had a baby brother. So, we went back home. I remember seeing Dr. Denny's car sitting in the yard prior to the time Dad came to get me. I don't remember what time of the night he was born. Everybody said Alan was the cutest baby they ever saw. He used to make me so mad. How come they all thought he was so cute? I heard most of my childhood how cute Alan was.